We're going to begin today with deportations in a week that saw Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan announce once again on social media the details of a flight that deported a number of men, women and children back to their country of origin. This is the third such chartered flight so far this year, and on this occasion, 35 people who were the subject of deportation orders were sent back to Nigeria. The flight cost €325,000, which Jim O'Callaghan said marked, in his words, value for money. Now, you'll have heard a lot of debate on Thursday already about the five children who were on that flight. And in response to queries from this programme, the Department of Justice also now confirmed that 28 people were detained in prison prior to that deportation, and the average length of their detention was 27 days. I've been speaking to one man who is currently living under the threat of deportation. His name is Mahmoud. He's Egyptian by birth, but spent much of his life in South Africa. He's told us he was a truck driver in South Africa and became the target of a criminal gang who hijacked his truck on a day when he was transporting flour, sugar and milk. He says the practice of the gang, which he claims has political and police connections in South Africa, was to steal the stock and kill the drivers. They spared him his life, but continued to pursue him for 6 million rand. And when he went to the police, he said one of the officers leaked his statement back to the gang, who then kidnapped his wife. In order to have his wife released, he paid the gang all he had, which was 200,000 rand, and then he and his wife fled the country, arriving in Ireland 3 years ago. His application for asylum was assessed, but not accepted by the authorities. Mahmoud, who's 51 years of age, is now the subject of a deportation order. He spoke to me about his situation as he watches and hears news of deportation flights, and I began by asking him if he had considered voluntarily presenting himself for deportation, the offer made to all failed asylum seekers by the state when their application for refugee status is refused.
Not at all. It's impossible. It's my life on the other side. I'm killing myself. If I'm doing it, I'm giving up on my life.
You believe your life is in danger if you go back to South Africa, is that it?
Yes, it is.
And what is it that you fear?
To be killed, of course, to be killed, my life. And I know that's going to be happen. There's no way I can go back and have peace.
So since you've got this letter telling you to either voluntarily deport yourself, leave the country, or await deportation by the state, what effect has that had on you, on your mental health, your stress levels? How does it affect you day to day?
Not sleeping, not focusing on my work, especially I'm a bus driver. So it's really, it's affecting everything. My way of eating, stress level, my mind is not with me. So I was like, I'm still going through a lot of thinking, where is my life will be, and where, how? That's the condition I was, and I'm still in, and I don't have peace in my life now.
And what is it that you fear in Ireland? Is it that you'll be arrested, detained, and put on a flight? That's what you fear?
That's what I fear. Whenever I see roadblock, it's affecting me totally. Like, I don't know what's going to happen now. Whenever I hear the ambulance behind me or Garda's siren running around, so I don't know what's going on. I
And you've been working legally in Ireland for years now.
Yeah, with work permit, with work permit and full Irish license, C&D level, which is bus and trucks, with complete CBC levels courses I've been done. Garda vetting for all jobs I'm doing.
You will be aware that this week there were people deported on a flight, including children.
Yes, Nigerian.
What did you think when you heard that?
I saw it yesterday online. It's been broadcasted, and I was like, I couldn't eat from yesterday. Up to now, 48 hours, I didn't eat.
And you fear that your time is running out, basically.
I see that 3-4 months ago it was a Georgian flight, now is Nigerian flight. So it's coming now. It's I don't know what to say.
When you hear the Minister for Justice say that not everybody comes here will get refugee status, that there is a limited number of places, and in order to be fair to those who really need it, some people have to be deported. What do you say to that?
whatever government here in Ireland is decide, it's okay. But also, like, we're asking for appeal that we don't want refugee status. Let me work. Let me live in peace. Hide myself here. That's all I'm asking. I don't want refugee status. I can go on a work permit. I can go into, let me to stay. I can go in anything. As long as I'm safe. You know that I came here into the island. When I came by the airport, I see the Garda. I ask, what is Garda here? They said it's the police. Okay, police, no guns. I came from country, the kids carrying guns. Everybody carrying gun. When two people fight in the club, they shoot each other. I came here, it's a free zone country. I was like amazed, like that's what God sent me to this place, to have peace in my life.
And you're originally from Egypt. Is it an option to go back to Egypt?
No, because I had an issue with the revenge of family issues in Upper Egypt, which is very bad revenge in Upper Egypt, 23 years ago. And I cannot go back to Egypt. And I explained that to the IBO. I cannot. It's Upper Egypt rules and regulation that I cannot go there.
What are your options now? You wait for the Gardaí to pick you up. Is there any way to apply for a work permit and regularise your situation as a bus driver, where, you know, bus drivers are needed in the country?
The issue now with a lawyer, he said just hold, because he only can do what he can do for... I don't understand about the law in Ireland here, but the law, the solicitor, what I'm dealing with now, and he told me, don't panic, and he gave me hope that you're not a bad person, you're not jobless, you're not, like, you know, you're working, you're doing that and that, so don't fear, but just calm down. Because I explained to him that I have no control in my emotions. It's not nice, you know, you understand what I mean?
Ideally, what life do you want for yourself?
Just normal life, that's if I can have peace and just carry on with my life. Have income and carry on with my life. That's whatever person needs. And just have a place to sleep peacefully. Wake up peacefully with energy to go to work. That's all. That's all.
And that was Mahmoud speaking to me earlier. Now, still here with me and listening to that were Fianna Fáil Minister of State Charlie McConlogue, Sinn Féin's Eoin Óibrin and Sinead Gibney of the Social Democrats. Charlie McConlogue, to you first. You heard there Mahmoud's story. He's working, he's paying taxes. He has a core skill that's of use to the country, and he fears for his life if he's rounded up, he says, and shipped back to South Africa. But based on what we've seen so far, that is what's in store for him, isn't it?
Yeah, good afternoon, Colm. And listen, that's a very human story from Mahmoud there. And it's representative of many people who want to live in Ireland because of the quality of life we have here. And it's important that we do have a strong and working immigration system. And indeed, we have many people who are living and working in Ireland and apply for visas every year. So, for example, there's over 52,000 people who have been issued long-term work visas over the course of the past year to work in Ireland. But part of the immigration system that we have is also that the asylum process, which is an international one. And part of a functioning asylum process is that when you go through it, and if you're successful, then you get full rights and residency within the country. But if you're not, and there's a very robust system in place to assess that, and we have a very fair system in place, and if you're not successful, then you have to leave the country. And in most cases, that's by voluntary return. But if somebody doesn't voluntarily leave the country, then part of an effective system is you have to have deportations as well. And I think Minister Jim O'Callaghan has worked very hard to make sure that we have a functioning and fair system, one that works well and one that works effectively. He's also significantly increased the number of staff involved in the process to make sure that there's as quick an answer and response as possible, and that times are shortened significantly for that, because that's important. But ultimately, for it to function, it has to. If you're not successful, end up in a situation where you don't actually receive a clearance and to stay in the country, and that means leaving voluntarily, or if not, in a very small number of cases, by deportation.
Okay, but has signalling the robustness of the system become more important than considering the cases of individuals. We saw during the week that the flights, it was said, announced on social media, there'd be another flight leaving. We've seen videos of the flights announced before. It seems to be talking about the system, but the system is supposed to also take into consideration the situations of individuals who, even if they don't get refugee status, can still be on an individual basis, be granted leave to remain.
And I think the most important thing is properly and fully and fairly assessing each application. And I think we have a very fair system in Ireland, and we also try to be as ensure that while people are here, they have as fulfilling a life as possible. That's why we allow people after 6 months to work, and we allow people to participate fully in education. But it's also why we're significantly increasing the number of staff involved in this too, to make sure that people do get prompt answers. But a small part of that, of the system, is ensuring that at the end of the day, if somebody isn't successful and if they don't comply with the response that they cannot stay in the country, and if they don't voluntarily return, that hopefully in a small number of cases that there is deportation. But right. that has to be a part of the process. But ultimately, it should be people making preparations themselves once they get their answer to voluntarily leave and be insisted in doing that.
And are you satisfied that people are being given the opportunity to voluntarily leave and prepare them for that, prepare themselves for that? And are you satisfied as well that the length of detention people are facing prior to deportation is necessary? The Department of Justice confirmed to this programme that 28 people were detained in prison prior to Thursday's deportation, and the average length of their detention was 27 days. Is that necessary when people, you know, in some cases were in state accommodation already?
I think in some instances it may be, but hopefully in a very small number of circumstances. I know there, in relation to the flight this week, there had been some suggestions that children had been swept up in dramatic fashion, but that wasn't the case in that instance. For the women and children involved, they weren't detained in advance and were given a date and time on which they'd be collected for the deportation
flight. Well, the first date they were given was in July, and then they were rounded up in June.
Well, they've been given a date in advance and the on which they'd be collected in relation to the women and children. But I think if you look at over the course of this year, there's been 1,940 deportation orders, and 888 people have departed the state, in the vast majority of instances voluntarily. Small number, 105, in terms of three flights so far from deportations. But I think it is a part of the process. The system has to work effectively, and that is a key part of it working effectively. Okay. But we are seeing an increasing number of people now leaving voluntarily. And last year, for example, that had increased very significantly to 934, having been just 213 the previous year.
Okay, there were 35 people deported, 28 were detained in advance. So this did include women.
The information I have in terms of the women and children involved, that they weren't, there was no detentions there, that there was a date given in advance. But I think it's important to note.
Well, there were 35 people on the flight. 21 of them were men, 9 were women, 5 were children. I mean, if 28 people were detained, it stands to reason that either some of them above the figure of 21 were women or children, and if no children were detained, then some of them had to be women.
Certainly, the information I have is in relation to the families with children involved. There wasn't any detentions. But I think it's important to know that there's every opportunity given in advance, following on from the process in terms of the decision, then the appeal, the option to appeal, which is almost always obviously availed of, and then following on from that, then the decision and the opportunity then given, a strong opportunity for people to leave after that point. Right. It's only after that if they don't leave voluntarily, there's a deportation order, and in most instances voluntary returns is part of that.
Right.
But in some instances, and an important part of the process as well, is that you do deportations if it doesn't work.
I do want to get to the other panellists. Sinead Gibney, you've heard the Minister on his defence of what happened on Thursday with the deportation of the people concerned. I mean, do you accept, first of all, that deportation is inevitably part of any immigration system?
Of course. And actually, I would describe it as the international protection system. I don't want to, you know, kind of split hairs on that. But I do think it's important because immigration is a much bigger picture. We all describe it as immigration or migration. But actually, what we're talking about is international protection. And that means that people have lost the protection of their home country, just as we heard Mahmoud describe in his story, his complex story. And every single person in this system represents a complex story. And in his case, and in every other case where people are claiming asylum, what they're claiming is that they have lost the protection of their home country. So they were going into the international global order to seek protection somewhere else, which they have an absolute right to do. And I think what happened on Thursday is not us as a people. It is not who we are. It is not the values that we hold as Irish people, that children would be rooted out in this way. And the trauma that has been inflicted on that entire community, the children, both in the international protection system who saw it happen, but also their classmates who now have vivid descriptions of people being bundled into the back of a van. That is the stuff of nightmares for these children.
So do you support what your colleague Gary Gannon says, that children who've been living here for years, there should be, in effect, an amnesty and their situation should be regularised?
I think absolutely an amnesty. I mean, first of all, sorry, to get back to the other question around are deportations a feature of any system? Yes is the answer to that. And we in the Social Democrats, of course, accept that. But I do agree with Gary that both an amnesty is required when children and families have been here for a number of years, are a part of our education system, are a part of our communities, are contributing members of our society and participating members of our society. There absolutely should be amnesty available for people. And there also needs to be an audit to understand exactly what these figures represent, because the figures are not reliable enough at the moment from what's coming from government, and we need to understand more. But I really also take exception to Minister McConnellogue's description of this system as fair, even as robust, because we were never meeting the requirements and obligations that we have internationally under the EU Receptions Directive and international law to treat people with the dignity that they deserve when they're claiming asylum and to allow them to claim asylum. And all that we're seeing from the government at the moment is restrictive measures playing into a narrative that they want to put out there, that they are tough on immigration, when we have an increasingly complex globe with increasingly complex stories of human who need our help.
All right, Eoin O'Brien, do you agree with what Sinead Gibney said there, or does the current system as it is in Ireland mirror what Sinn Féin is calling for, a system that you've said before is firm, or a system to be firm, fair and efficient?
Well, first of all, the government continues to mismanage the international protection system. And this is something we have been raising for years. And with respect to the events of this week, there is no doubt that part of what the very high profile nature of Minister O'Callaghan has done is to try and distract attention away from their failures in terms of running an international protection system that is compassionate, that is human rights rooted, but also that is fair, efficient and ultimately enforced. So, for example, if you take this week, we should not have a situation where it's taking 3 years, or in the case of some people that I'm working with in the Direct Provision Centre in my own constituency, 4 or 5 or 6 years for final decisions to be made. That should not be the way in which the system
But when it does, should they accrue, effectively, should the state take the hit for leaving them in the system that long and recognise that people have made connections, put down roots and built a life here?
And in some cases, that is exactly what happens when people get subsidiary protection and leave to remain, which is part of the function of that part of the process. But what I would say is, in the first instance, the minister needs to focus on improving the efficiency of the system, both for the people who come here to seek protection because they're fleeing war and persecution, but also to do right by those people who ultimately, if they are denied both international protection and subsidiary protection and must return to their country of origin, the challenges that we've seen this week aren't there. With respect to children, and I think this is, and I do agree with Sinead, this is one of the most concerning things this week. I'm very taken by the comments of the principal of the school in Dublin 8 in terms of the just lack of due regard to the children themselves and their peers. And therefore, while I'm not at all suggesting that there won't be cases where people who lose their right to remain in the state and are returning to their country of origin won't be taking their children, that has to be done in a completely different way. We need a system.
So you don't support an amnesty for people with children, do you?
I don't support a blanket amnesty. I do think every individual case needs to be assessed. We need good quality decisions in our international protection system. Like I say, people do have the right to apply for subsidiary protection, leave to remain. But where somebody is refused on first application, refused on appeal, and is refused subsidiary protection, then there is an obligation on them to return to the country of origin. I'm also not satisfied that every effort was made in terms of the families this week to give them every opportunity to voluntarily return to their country of origin. In fact, my understanding is at least one of the families wasn't given adequate opportunity. And therefore, this is a part of the system. Like Sinead, I fully agree with that. International protection has to be what it says it is. People have to be able to apply for it. If they're refused, they have to be assisted to return to their country of origin. Otherwise, the public will continue not to have confidence in the system. But these things should be done in a much better way. And here's the problem. Just as this government continues to mismanage the accommodation arrangements for people in international protection and the decision-making process, they're also not doing this right. And what the government are trying to do is make it look like they're reforming the system when they're not, neither in the interest of the applicants or the wider public and the public interest.
All right. The Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, Charlie McConlogue, said it's untenable to give people who have children, I suppose what might be termed an enhanced right to remain on the basis that this is this would be a pull factor. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with that. And that's why it's really important in relation to the international protection system that we work with other countries. We work within the EU in particular. And that's why we signed up to the EU Migration Pact, because it's important that there is that cooperation. And it's important that you're aligned as well. Because if you do have a structure or a system, for example, as you're outlining there, whereby after a certain period of time, people can remain in the country or children can remain in the country, that will undoubtedly lead to more people coming to the country because of that. I think the most important thing here is what the government is doing,
well,
which
I suppose
is increasing the number
the counter-argument to that, Charlie McConlogue, counter-argument to that would be if a system worked properly, they wouldn't be in the system for 3 years if they came to the country with a family, and that wouldn't happen.
And that's absolutely the objective here. And that's why the government has very significantly increased the number of staff in this, and Minister Callaghan has made that very clear, that his objective is to ensure that people get prompt decisions so that they're not waiting too long. As you know, back in 2022, the last government had a regularisation scheme for long-term undocumented people, and that was a once-in-a-generation regularisation scheme, and it allowed thousands of people at that time to regularise their positions, especially people with families who'd been in the country for many years. But you can't have an ongoing amnesty, otherwise you don't have a functioning system.
All right.
The key thing is making sure the system functions well, is compassionate, is fair, and make sure that there is strong decisions and decisions which are robust in terms of people's right to
And presumably those decisions have to be based on facts. Let's look at the cost of this, the charter flights. They're expensive. The latest flight to Nigeria carrying 35 people on board cost €325,000. The Minister for Justice told Rachel English on the News at One on Thursday that the flight is value for money. But we submitted a Freedom of Information request on this programme back last August. And we asked for a copy of the business case and the cost-benefit analysis that was used to support the tender for charter flights for deportation. And we also asked for the records of meetings at which business case and cost-benefit analyses were discussed. And the decision maker of the FOI came back and told us there are no records of that. There was no business case. There were no meetings. So is this value for public money? Because there's a lot of controversy raised about spending in other areas. If checks are being written with no business case for something like this, is that sound decision making?
Well, I think it's, chartered flights and deportations are not the way that you want people to leave at the end of the process. But it has to be an important part if people don't leave voluntarily. And if you look at this year so far, there's been 888 people have departed the state under various mechanisms. And the vast majority of those instances have been voluntary return, 105 so far through the three deportation flights. So it should be a very, very small part. But ultimately, if at the end of a process and if with the assistance and being funded to return, people don't necessarily do that. You do have to have that in order for the system to function effectively.
I think the idea of associating value for money with anything that this government has done over the last couple of decades in terms of international protection is just ridiculous. We have failed to invest in state-run centres and instead flitted money away with private contractors. But I also want to pick up on the pull factor that you put to the minister just there, because that is exactly what this government is concerned with, and that is exactly how how this immigration or this international protection system is informed. And I will take one of the examples that the minister mentioned, which was about the right to work, which is now granted to people after 6 months. That was the courts that forced this government to do that in 2017. And even when they did, they took months to actually make it a system that people could use. And then furthermore, it took years before, again, the courts eventually forced this government to provide people in the international protection system with both bank accounts and driving licenses, which meant that they could actually realise that right to work. They are dragged kicking and screaming to meet any of the obligations we have to put any compassion into our system and to build any kind of system where people can integrate into society. We will get so much benefit. We are an ageing and growing demographic, and we need people in this country to help in our hospitals, in our health systems, in our retail systems, everywhere. And instead resisting...
I don't agree with that at all, Colm.
People would argue, Sinead Gibney, that there is a regular work permit immigration system to do that, and the international protection system is not the way to do it.
The international protection system is just a fraction of that. It absolutely contributes to it. And the people I meet in the international protection system, just like Mahmoud, who we heard earlier, are so grateful of the right to be here, so keen to participate in our society and contribute. And they pay taxes. I came from the tech sector, where all across the big tech companies, they were all proud of the fact that they were either first generation or immigrants in America who had built those companies.
Owen O'Brien.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not surprised at the response you got to your freedom of information request, because there is no assessment of value for money or the protection of the public interest in any aspect of our international protection system. Accommodation is probably the most glaring example where the government is allowing wide-scale profiteering for the provision of often a poor quality accommodation for international protection applicants in a completely ad hoc manner, which in many ways creates conflicts with local communities because there's a lack of adequate engagement and consultation with those. And likewise, for example, the first instance should always be where somebody no longer has the legal right to remain in the state. The first instance should always be to assist them to voluntarily return. And if, as we're hearing in the case of some of the people who were deported this week, they weren't afforded that opportunity, you have to ask yourself, was actually there an element of performative propaganda in what the government did this week?
Well, let me put that to Charlie McConnell.
To conceal their utter failure to manage this system like they're not managing any other aspects of public service provision adequately.
Are deportation flights effectively an expensive ad for governments? Robust, as you'd like to portray it, deportation policy?
No, certainly not. And listen, I take exception to both Sinead and Owen's portrayal that the government hasn't been fair, compassionate in relation to how we have dealt with and tried to deal with what has been a significant increase in the number of people seeking international protection over the last 2 or 3 years. Let's remember, and let's not detach yourself from the reality of the last couple of years in terms of, you know, how the country has stepped up and in terms of providing support to people, particularly coming from the war in Ukraine, and how that undoubtedly did put pressure on accommodation as well as pressure as well for what was available in relation to the international protection system. But I think the Irish people and the Irish government have been compassionate in relation to how we have provided a system for people to have their applications processed, but also refuge for people as well and support.
Okay.
And listen, but we do and we are responding to that increased number and pressure in the system by increasing the number of staff.
I want to
make sure it works effectively.
I want to put one more thing to you, and this it comes from a text from a listener as well. But it says, ask the politician, should Trump deport the Irish illegals as Ireland has deported those school children and their parents? Can Irish politicians go to the United States any longer with a straight face and ask for exceptions to be made for Irish people who've overstayed work and holiday visas and get special treatment when the government here is advertising there'll be no special treatment for anyone here?
You're putting that to me, Colin.
I am indeed.
Obviously, in terms of the system in America, many Irish people have been there for many years and have become regularised over those years. And what we have seen is a significant step change in the last year from the Trump administration.
But sure, what's the difference between that and the truck driver at the top of the programme, who's been
Irish
here
people,
for years?
Well, in those instances, Irish people.
And he
people
was there
gone,
legally until he was given the deportation order.
In those instances, Irish people have gone and been facilitated by the Irish or by the US government to build a life and to have all aspects of economic life as part of that. And now they're significantly step changing what they're doing.
They may also be there on fake tax numbers and fake papers, having overstayed a holiday visa, Charlie McConnellow.
But I mean, in many instances, but people were facilitated for many years to be able to build a life, have a family, go to schools, and be fully part of a society there.
It comes back
to the importance of a consistent immigration system. And what we're talking about here is in relation to our international protection system, trying to make sure when people apply for international protection that their application is processed as promptly as possible and that that there is an effective system in place.
We do need to move on because we want to get to the issue of rent pressure zones. We're going to come to that after this break. Back in a minute.
Saturday with Colm O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.